From the Buffalo Wild Wings on Grape Street in Whitehall, this is RCN Sports Talk. It's Wild, part of the Dine and Donate program to benefit the American Cancer Society. And good evening and welcome, everyone. I'm Chris Michael. So glad you could join us for the second of four remote shows over the summer from here at Buffalo Wild Wings on Grape Street in Whitehall. If you're in the nearby area, come on out here. If you haven't had dinner or you had dinner and you're looking to top off your meal, go to the RCN website, first of all, rcn.com/RCNTV. Go to the Dine and Donate program with the Buffalo Wild Wings. Print out the flyer and the coupon that's on there for the Dine and Donate program, and then come on down here because a portion of your bill will be donated to the American Cancer Society and the Relay for Life. So we'd love to have you out here for this program, but if you're coming out to watch the draft, watch the Major League Baseball games, come on out here tonight and bring that coupon with you to participate and help us raise money for the American Cancer Society. Now we have some special guests on tonight's program. Before I introduce the special guests, I will introduce the co-host of the program and the man who on our last show, when I wasn't there for the first time in like 4 years, was out of the state. And he had a chance to introduce me. He took the low road, bashed me, called me a bold-faced liar, say I make up stories, said my name starts with a character from Disneyland, it starts with the letter G, among other things he said about me, the co-host of the program, Mr. Joseph Linwood Craig. Joe, I want to thank you for all those nice things you said about me on our last program when I wasn't there to defend myself.
Well, I want you to know that it was meant right from the heart. It was totally true. You've already given one falsehood today. I mean, you're not 10, 20 words, and you're using that Linwood middle name. And
that's because Mike Schneider told me years ago to say that,
I know,
and until he tells me differently, that's what I'm going to use.
And one of these Mary birth certificate.
Just thank you for, I at least wait till you're here to rip you.
You
waited till I was out of the state to take it.
Wait a minute. I've watched when I wasn't here. I've seen a few of the shows, and I know what is said. See, it's all on there.
On demand.
Always.
I'm surprised you could figure that out.
I know how, I even figured it out.
All right.
Absolutely.
Now let's
good to be back, though. I'm glad you're here with us.
I'm sure you are.
I wasn't here. We weren't here last week, and I'm on my way somewhere else, and I won't be here next week.
You won't be here next week. So it'll be a perfect program.
And I know you're going to rip me next week.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, let's explain what we're doing here. As many people know in the RCN viewing area, Bob Frankenfield, longtime head coach at Wilson, retired this year, stepped down, and we wanted to do a show to honor him. And we're hoping to have him here. He's in traffic right now. But we have the next best thing, because let's introduce our guests here at the panel. We have, from right to left, longtime assistant coach, Don Benner, and longtime assistant coach, and now the new Wilson head basketball coach, Mike Glovis. And Don and Mike, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having us. We're glad to do it.
Now, maybe it's going to work out better that Bob's not here, at least to start the program, because now you can say everything behind his back that you always wanted to say. But we are still going to talk about Bob and Wilson basketball. And, Mike, obviously we're going to talk about you taking over the program in a few moments. But I know Bob, Coach Frankenfield, and you guys have spent a lot of years together. And everyone in Wilson seems to know each other and have kind of a history with everyone. So you guys, you kind of take it and talk about where the three of you had first met.
Well, actually, I was head coach, and Bob was my assistant, and I coached Mike up until his junior year. Then I resigned, and Bob took over, and then, like they say, the rest is history. He's been there forever. So I knew Mike as an athlete. I knew Bob as an assistant coach, and we go back a few years, back to 1976, I think. So it's a few years ago.
And Mike, you played for Don.
Don up until my junior year. And as I had mentioned to you earlier, my wife actually was the scorekeeper for Don before I was playing for Don.
Yeah.
And we obviously met. She was a year older than me. She's now been my wife for 28 years. And, that, as they say, is history. But I was with Don all those years, and then Bob took over. And I helped him assist back in the early 90s. And then when we started having children, I stopped and then, came back to the program, a few years ago. I was on the girls' side. But he's been a real close friend. As I mentioned, his nickname is Herc, which is based on
I've
Hercules.
I've known him for over 20 years. I did not know that.
My sister went to school with him. And, that was his nickname, Herc. Mm-hmm. And as our group, when we first came in, that's what we called him. We called him Herc. Who's the head coach? Well, it's Herc. But, we call him Coach, Coach Frankenfield or Coach, but everybody knew him as Herc within the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of, you know, met your wife through growing up in the Wilson basketball program, too, which I think is neat. Not the first time I've heard that, too, about athletes and scorekeepers knowing each other and then just getting married and building a family from that.
That is correct.
And, Don, you, of course, left, and you were an assistant at other schools, and you coached against Bob. So what was that relationship like over the years as a former colleague and then a rival for at least a few years?
It was a tough situation. For example, in 1 year, Saucon Valley, where I had gone, played Wilson for the championship. Now, Bob had been there, I don't know how long at that point, maybe 17, 18 years, and never had a shot at it. And Matt Brown, the fine young coach at Saucon, was in about his fourth year. And, of course, Saucon upset Wilson, and one of the parents from Saucon, I didn't look too happy in the celebration. She said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Well, it's pretty hard to see one of your best friends come up short when he put 17 or 18 years into this thing and see a guy that's just new on the block taking over. I'm happy for Matt, but I'm feel very bad for Bob because Bob's such a great guy."
Yeah. And there's a lot of that, I think, in the Colonial League that there's your fierce rivals on the court, but as soon as the game's over or before the games or at practices or scrimmages, you guys all seem to get along real well, both head coaches and assistant coaches.
Yeah, it really is a nice community when you're looking at it's more of a small school league. Some of the schools have gotten larger over the years with Bangor and Southern Lehigh being 4A within the league. But you just kind of feel that camaraderie, you know, growing up because you may know the coaches or they were in the league or you saw them play. And, like, the history of it all is, you know, everybody has their day. And Mr. Benner was a Fountain Hill Hiller and played on a state championship team as the point guard. And that was, like, he taught us that and the value of community and history and basketball. And it always stayed with us. And, you know, so it was something that I learned young, and he's passed that along to us. And we've looked forward to, you know, hope we can pass some good things along to the kids as well.
Don, you were at... You played at Fountain Hill?
I played at Fountain Hill, yeah.
When was that?
1955-56. We won the state championship in 56, my senior year. The year before, we come up short. The year after, they won again.
I remember.
Unfortunately, my mother was not too swift. She sent me to school a year too early. I could have been on three teams instead of two.
Now, when you were there after Carol Strzelecki?
No, before Carol Strzelecki.
Before Carol
Strzelecki was a year behind me. I see Carol once a month on a Wednesday. A bunch of Hillers get together at the Hellertown Diner, and we have breakfast.
My sister graduated from Fountain Hill High School in 53 or 54.
54, I think it was. Yeah. I remember her now. Yeah, I never associated the fact, Joe, that would be your sister.
That was who it was. Well, when you said that about Fountain Hill, you know, that was some great rivalries back in those days of Fountain Hill. And, you know, it was such a great basketball program.
We only had two sports at the time. They added soccer later. And the town was just crazy about basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Now, as far as Bob, I know Bob's kind of been talking about retiring the last few years. And thankfully, I was hoping he would come back year after year. This year seemed a little different. When did he break the news to you guys that this was going to be his final year?
Well, he had a lot of things that were going through his mind because he actually retired as a teacher the previous year. Yeah. So... you know, we knew it wouldn't be long. We, you know, he wanted to stick around, and, you know, he had, you know, his grandchildren are growing up, and he had a lot of other things going on this year. But it was, you know, you look at it, and he just knew it was time. And I think during the year, he was kind of feeling that this is it, and he was telling us that, you know, this is probably going to be it. I'm done. And he had some tough things he was going through, you know, with the family, and personally, he has, you know, a big extended family and people. So he had, like, some things he went through that were difficult, but he pulled through it. Mm-hmm. And but then, you know, he resigned at the end of the year, and it's like 35 years. You don't realize how fast it goes because he started coaching me in 81, and you don't know anything different at Wilson High School if you've been there to a game because it's been him, and before that it was Donnie. So this is like a transition for us all. But as we talked about, the thing with him that was – my thing that people don't realize was he benched me when I was a senior because I missed the bus. I was late for the bus. We were going to Palisades, which is closer to Wilson. You know, I can get it to Palisades as fast as I can get to Wilson. And I went down there, and he sat me, and it was a life lesson. And he taught you lessons. They both did. But he didn't – back. It didn't matter, and it was a lot more there were a lot more rules back then for athletes. It was a lot stricter, and I think that was part of how we grew up. And I appreciate the things he did and the sternness that he was as a coach.
And I think that's one of the great things about Bob is that, You know, in some ways you have to be flexible over the years, but in some areas you have to be strict. You have to be stubborn and not move. And I think in a lot of those areas where other coaches, especially younger coaches, I think feel a lot of pressure to give in or to backpedal, Bob stood his ground a lot of times. And I thought he was applauded for being supported from the administration that way. And he taught a lot of life lessons, as you said, because I think, especially as the years went on, he would talk to us in the media not just about X's and O's, but about trying to teach kids lessons that would help them in life.
It got tougher. As the more recent years, it got tougher because parental involvement in the last 10 to 15 years has been a lot different than it was, you know, when most of us were coaching originally. Don, you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was a different world. When you were coaching back in the 60s, 70s, even the 80s, parental involvement was totally different than it was in the mid-90s up through now. So it was easier for a coach to toe the line back in those days.
Yeah.
And the ones that could still toe the line now are really rare. But Bob was one of those guys. You know, he just did a great job with it.
Yeah, it's great common sense. He knows exactly what to do in all situations. He makes very good decisions and always did from the time I've known him.
One of the things, too, and I was picking Dennis Lobb's brain the other day because Wilson always seems to have some blue-collar athletes. No matter who comes through, the different makeup, they always seems to have a couple people that are hard-working players, people that would dive for balls, people that would really hustle, sometimes more players than other years. But I think Bob really enjoyed having those type of players on his team. And again, Wilson seems to be one of those schools that every year, especially when they had success, they have at least one of those blue-collar players. But, you know, who were some of your favorite players at Wilson over the years, and who were some of the guys that Bob really enjoyed watching and coaching?
Okay, I'll go first. First of all, John Trincheri, who scored 1,000 points when I coached him. I picked him up his sophomore year. I had him for 3 years. He's one of my all-time favorites. Michael here I like quite a bit, too. I only had the opportunity to be with him 2 years. His freshman year, he played football and didn't come out till late, so as a result, we kept him down on the freshman team. Is that right, Mike?
That's correct.
And the next year, he started as a sophomore. There's a kid by the name of Trevor Somlock who, unfortunately, got involved in a little problem, and Bobby, again, had to discipline him, and he needed like 9 or 19 points to be a 1,000-point scorer, and he got in a jam over Christmas and was dismissed from the team because of it. I love Trevor. He was a good, hard-nosed kid, and there's just so many and over the years, you know. Greg Peischer, who we mentioned before the show, is going to be one of his assistants. He was a good, hard-nosed kid. It just was a joy. When I coached down there, it was a different thing. It was just a joy coaching. You had kids that come out day in and day out, just worked hard, did as they were told, and that was it.
Well, you also had the proximity to Easton right there. You know, a lot of your kids, they were street kids. A lot of them, you know, they grew up in that kind of an environment, similar to what the Easton kids did. So they were tough. I mean, you had to be tough just to survive, right?
Well, the thing is, Wilson's that 10 blocks in Easton. That's 15th to 25th, and then you have Williams Township.
Right.
And it's changed a lot over the years, but it's still that, you know, you have Wilson and you have, you know, Avona, which is, you know, where the middle school is. But the same way, there was always those guys that you watched that played that were exciting to watch. And, like, I watched, you know, Donnie's group when he was coaching before me, or, you know, when I was coming up through the program, just going to see the varsity play, and that was exciting. And, you know, I got to see John play a lot, John Trincheri. I remember when Herc won his championship in 2009, he had Graham Toohey, who was a tough kid, the kid that attacked the basket, you know, he scored a lot, and they had Drew Parr, whose dad played at Easton, you know, back there in 72 when they went down to
Dana
Parr, correct. And, you know, he was a point guard. Like you said, sometimes the point guards don't get the attention and all the fanfare, but he was like the heart and soul of doing all the dirty work. And you look back at that, and Bonnie and I talked about Chris Eckhart, you know, the groups before that. I remember the battles they had against Notre Dame. And there were, you know, just a lot of individuals. Mark Fournier was a battler. Brian Boylan was a complete maniac on the board. So you got to see some kids over the years play. And it, like you said, it was, you grew up with playing against the kids from Easton as a child because you'd play in the leagues against them. And Groovy, Wayne Groob, if you remember Wayne Group.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Nobby used to take the kids from Williams Township down the south side, and we would play against A to B Cheston and Lackinor in baseball, and they would come up when Billy Rambo was going through. So we got a lot of exposure to playing against the kids from Easton, as you know, when we were growing up. And that was exciting.
And I think a lot of those kids, they overlap. A lot of them were friends. I mean, they hung out together. You know, they were different.
The same thing is, like, when you went to college, those guys became your friends. Jakey Williams from Easton, a lot of the guys that played football at Easton played with me at Bloom. And you know them for life then, and that there's a lot of camaraderie between the groups.
And there were some recent players, too, and, you know, you were on the staff, too. Did you know, was there a type of player that you guys really liked to have in the fold? And, you know, again, I got the impression that he kind of, the guy who got rebounds and the guy who played defense was more of a guy that Bob really liked to kind of talk about and highlight than someone that would average 20 points a game.
Well, what he would say, we'd always say, it's the guy, do the little things.
Yeah.
You know, instead of just all the points, you want to fill up the stat sheet. You know, get the rebounds, you know, get the loose balls that are flying on the court, you know, the jump balls, you know, take a charge. Be physical in there. Let them know you're there. And that was important because that set the tone for the team. You can have the best scorers and shooters, but if you don't have that grit on a team, that toughness internally, you're not going to get anywhere.
You might not, just in sheer numbers, you might not have the great talent. But that other stuff is stuff that doesn't require a lot of talent. It requires intestinal fortitude, and that's what
Bobby
it is.
Bobby always put him in their place. He takes the game film apart better than anybody I've ever seen. He has stats. He can tell you how many times you bounce the ball. You can't put anything over in him. If there's an open man you missed, or a bad shot you took, or a time you didn't box out, all little things. And like Mike said, it's the little things that add up to the W or the L, depending how which way it goes.
It's the things that aren't in the score, you know, the things that aren't in the stat sheet that the public sees. They just see points. They don't see what really happened in the game.
Our special guests here at the table are new Wilson head coach, Mike Glovis, longtime assistant under Bob Frankenfield, Don Benner, also a former head coach and longtime assistant under Bob Frankenfield. We're still hoping to have Bob here for a few minutes here, although we know he's tied up in traffic and was coming from Philly tonight. We do have a special guest that we're going to get to right after this commercial break, so stick with us. This is the RCN Sports Talk Gets Wild program, broadcasting live from Buffalo Wild Wings on Grape Street in Whitehall. Again, if you're in the nearby area, come on out. We hope that you can get here before 8 o'clock, but if not, go to the RCN website, print out the Dine and Donate coupon, bring it with you, and have some great wings, have some great adult beverages here. Enjoy all the TVs, enjoy all the atmosphere that goes on here as you're watching your favorite Major League Baseball games, the draft going on tonight. A lot of great things happening at Buffalo Wild Wings. Come on out here, bring that flyer with you, and a portion of your bill will go to the American Cancer Society. More of tonight's program in just a moment. Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, the second of four special shows broadcasting live from Buffalo Wild Wings on Grape Street in Whitehall. Tonight's event is to raise money for the American Cancer Society. Check out the RCN website for details on tonight's event and our upcoming shows from Buffalo Wild Wings throughout the summer months. We promised this very special guest here, our own Melanie Pawlowski, is standing by with former Twin County Sports Director and former Bob Frankenfield fourth grade coach, Bob Garris, who brought a project from Bob Frankenfield's grammar days over in the Wilson Area School District. But Melanie has some great stories with Mr. Bob Garris. Melanie?
Thanks, Chris. As you mentioned, we have a pretty cool project that Coach Frankenfield made in the fourth grade. It's a rain catcher, which we might be able to use tonight, actually, if the weather holds up. But just tell us about this project and why you have it now.
Well, the reason I have it, years ago when I taught in Wilsonboro, Bobby was one of my students in the elementary grades, and we did have a project. The kids had to make a simple machine, and Bobby put together the rain catcher, or rain gauge, and with some help of his dad and a few things helping him out, because you have to cut things and we didn't want the kids to get their fingers hurt. But anyway, Bobby was able to, with the help, put together this rain gauge. And it's a simple machine. And when it rains, Sometimes it pours, other times it's very dry. And so it does measure the amount of rain when it rains. And that was one of Bobby's projects. And the reason I have it, I have to tell you this, I have a daughter, Mary Ann, who works in the Wilson Branch Bank there for Sovereign Bank. And she told me one day, Bobby Frankenfield came in as a customer and he had something for me. And Bobby gave my daughter, Mary Ann, this rain gauge and said, give it to your dad. I don't need it anymore. Maybe he can use it. So that's how I have the rain gauge.
Have you used it since?
No. And we've had rain, but it would have been good to have it for the U.S. Open.
Well, it's held up pretty well since then, so he did a good job. What do you think that says about his ability to become such a great coach in later years?
Well, what I think is that he did measurements correctly. When he went to put it together, it went together perfectly. And so you would think this little kid in elementary school would have all the help in the world to do this. But 99% of the work he did by himself. So what does it tell you about Bobby being a basketball coach? Well, he's over the years, he's put in a lot of years coaching, and he never gave up. And the thing is, he came out a winner. And Bobby Frankenfield is one heck of a guy.
What's it like years later having your former students or their, you know, sons and daughters remembering you and, you know, thinking of you and giving you back these things that you instilled in them, you know, so many years ago?
Well, it makes me feel pretty good because I know I'm not forgotten. And this is not the only thing that's happened to me in the last couple of years. I'm living right now over at Phoebe Nursing Home, and every so often, the knock comes on my door, and people come in, and they want to know if I'm the guy that was their teacher back in the elementary or secondary grades. And, of course, they very quickly see that it's still me, and the only thing is I'm a little bit older. But Bobby was one of my good guys. And even with basketball coming up, I'll try to get to see him at least at the games this year, even though he's retired, because there's a game I want to go to see. When they play Penn Argyle, I have a grandson, Kyle Hutnick. He's been coaching basketball at Penn Argyle High School the last 3 years or so. So that'll be a great thing just to see the two of them together on the basketball court, maybe shake hands a little bit and say, Bob, here's my grandson. And of course, Bobby, I'll just shake his hand and say, it's been good to know you all these years.
And you mentioned, you know, being remembered by former students and players, and this T-shirt's a good example of that. Is that right?
Well, the shirt I have on is the baseball shirt. I coached baseball a couple years at Wilson High School. And the 1 year, 1967, we won the Northern Division Championship of the old Lehigh Northampton League. We beat Nazareth in a game 3-2. And the reason I mention this, last fall at Phoebe Nursing Home, I had a visit of four of my former players. Davey C. Chris came over. Let's see, I'm trying to get them organized. Dave C. Chris was there. Chuck Anderson was one of them. The third baseman was Dale Jarvis. And in that ball game that we won over Nazareth, Dale Jarvis stole home for the winning run. And they
That's pretty awesome.
To see me. And I thought it was a pretty good visit from my former baseball players.
That's so great about sports, too. It puts you right back in the moment, even though it was years ago. Is that right, too?
It sure does. And me with sports, it's baseball, basketball, football, whatever comes, and keeps me going day by day.
So I have to ask, anything that Coach Frankenfield taught you when he was a fourth grader, anything you remember from him that maybe stuck with you?
Well, I don't know if he taught me anything, but I tried to teach him to be good students. And I think with the success he's made on the basketball court, at least it shows that he was a good coach. And that's what it's all about. You don't have to win them all, but if you win, that's fine. If you lose, win the next time.
That's great advice. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure.
Chris, back to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Melanie, and the legendary Bob Garris for joining us and sharing those memories about Bob Frankenfield. Joining Joe Craig and myself here at the main table, Don Banner and Mike Glovis, longtime assistants and former head coaches. With, in the case of Don, Mike is the new head coach at Wilson High School, and we're going to be talking about current basketball issues in just a few minutes. But I did want to spend a few more minutes talking about Bob and his career and about the unbelievable, because I didn't know this until I had been covering him for many years, that he never played varsity. And so maybe you guys could talk about how he got the head coaching position and how he became such an effective coach without having to play, having the experience of playing at the varsity level.
Well, actually, Bob came on board with me his first year of teaching. He had gone to Moorhead State, and down there they had pretty good basketball. He used to go to the gym and watch the practices, and he had a pretty good idea of what was going on. In fact, back in those days, the head coach used to sit on the bench till the end of the third quarter. I lasted one game for two reasons. Number one, he knew what he was doing, and number two, I didn't want to get hit with any flying objects.
Well, Mike has a story about flying objects, too. I don't know if you want to share that on air, but...
The main thing with back then when I was playing under Coach Frankenfield, or as we call him, Herc, they had a rule that the coaches couldn't stand up, so he was generally, you know, you had to sit, and he would kick the bench when he was mad, and the coaches would fly back into the kids sitting behind. It was funny, but that's the way it was done. Yeah. They couldn't be pacing the sidelines like you see today. So, but he was one of the original breaking of the clipboards, and I actually had a player for me one time drew me a picture of Coach Frankenfield. Now, they didn't know this until we had discussed it many times, but Herc breaking a clipboard over his leg, and it was pretty comical. It's just... He was really intense and got your attention, had a way of getting your attention when you played for him.
By the way, am I going to get an angry phone call from Coach Frankenfield saying we shouldn't have said Herc on the air?
No, not at all.
Absolutely not.
No? Oh, okay, I just want to make sure. But, you know, I mean, I didn't know that until years later that I had been covering, because he was so thorough in his preparation that he hadn't played at the varsity level. But, I mean, where did he develop that passion from, do you think? Because he understood the game so well. And I, for one, learned so much from having a chance to talk to him before the games.
You know, just before they answer that question, you know, that's not that uncommon. A lot of the best coaches, if you look at up and down the line, even up into the pros, some of the very best coaches were guys who either rode the pines or watched from somewhere else rather than actually competed all the time as a varsity player. And I think it's because...
How many stayed in four decades as a head coach?
No. That's a rarity. But I'm just saying, I think what happens is when you take that role and you're sitting there and you're really not playing much, you're absorbing things. If you're a real student of the game. And I think that's what happens. I think that's how that occurs.
If you remember, the one coach that was a football coach, the basketball official that coached at Southern Lehigh and up at Bangor as a football coach, he didn't play football, but he was a good football coach as well.
Skaggs.
But with Herc, like I said, he had such a commitment. And at his career, he had no enemies. So to continue, everybody says, how did he continue for so long? Because he was so well-liked that it was easy for him to continue. There was nobody out there. It just made everybody feel very comfortable, you know, from all the years of the guys that played with him. And like I said, the best year we talked about was when they went to the Elite Eight with like Greg Yorty and Glennie Seipel. I think Mingle, Dusty Helm, I think, was on the team. They had a great group of kids, really gritty, but, you know, that was his thing. You know,
yeah, he liked those groups.
Yeah, he liked those kids.
Don, do you think that was his favorite team, or was there a favorite team that you had, or you remember a story in which he talked about a team that he really liked? Maybe not the most successful, but a team he really enjoyed coaching.
I know he enjoyed greatly the Elite Eight team. He had quite a few stories about that. But getting back to how Bob learned so much, Bob was always going to clinics. We went to many clinics. In fact, we went to one in Boston one time. We missed an exit. I saw Fenway Park for the first time. And then on the way back, I woke up just in time to keep him from going into Canada. So our road trips were something to behold. Finally, we got it right. We went to Las Vegas, and the pilot got us there. But that's basically...
Were you supposed to go to Las Vegas?
Yeah, we were supposed to go there, and okay. It was a great clinic. We also won some money, so it was a win-win situation for all of us.
Now, this year, was it tough for Bob? Because as long as I've known him, he's always... When bad things would happen, he would take the blame. But when there was a lot of positives, he would be always pushing the kids in the spotlight and saying, talk to the kids after the game, or you know, make sure you mention this player and mention that this kid, he doesn't score a lot of points, but he does this. He works hard in practice. He volunteers at junior camps over the summer. Was this year a little tough because he had some ceremonies, you know, a great job done by Wilson High School at his last game. The Colonial League, I thought, did a great job honoring him at the Colonial League Basketball Championships with a plaque and recognizing him. Was he a little uncomfortable being in the spotlight a little bit this past year?
I think that it was such a long trail to be on, but I think it really meant a lot to him that they showed such support for him throughout. And he's a very emotional coach, as most people know. He can yell at you, but he sheds a lot of tears during the course of a year, and he's emotional with the team and the players, and he's very involved. Like he always says, family is first, and what he tries to teach the coaches in the league, and basically the younger coaches, which is everyone who's in the league, he tries to teach them that don't forget about your family, because that was one of his things he talked about. His biggest regret was, you know, his family spending more time with him. So he was very, like, a real mentor to everybody in the league and well-respected.
Don, do you have something to add to that?
I think Mike said just about everything you can really say, but I think one of the reasons he came back for his last year, this past year, was because he had that 1,000-point score thing lined up and ready to go, and he wanted to take part in that. I think basically he wanted to retire from teaching and coaching at the same time, but I think that event kept him there for another year.
And he is going to stay on as the assistant athletic director, which is good because you know he'll be around Wilson campus quite a bit then. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more of our special show, Talking Wilson Hoops. Joining us at the main table, Mike Lovis, the new head Wilson basketball coach and a longtime assistant and head coach at Wilson High School, Don Benner. We'll be back with more RCN Sports Talk in just a moment. Welcome back. RCN Sports Talk Gets Wild, the second of four shows broadcasting live from Buffalo Wild Wings on Grape Street in Whitehall. Tonight's event to benefit the American Cancer Society. We're talking Wilson Sports, joining Joe Craig and myself at the main table, Mike Lovis and Don Benner. Bob Frankenfield was our scheduled guest. Again, unfortunately, he's not going to be able to be here with us tonight, but we're sharing some memories about Coach Frankenfield. One thing I did want to ask these guys, too, especially with Bob not here, because every time I saw Coach Frankenfield early in the year and I'd ask him, how are you going to be this year? He was always gloom and doom. He was 5 wins this year. He was going to be in the basement this year. And then when I'd see him a month or 5 weeks later, you know, he had his team, no matter who he had his team playing better. They were always you know, middle of the pack or upper part of the pack. Did he do that with you guys at all, or was that just for the media?
It basically is how he felt, because he'd get worked up before the preseason, and we always would talk about it, even before I was coaching with him, and Donnie knows because he was with him, and then, you know, Donnie was coaching in other places. But he would give you that gloom and doom every year, and then you eventually said to him, listen, this, you know, you can stop it, because that's not the way it's going to be. You're going to be fine. You'll make districts. You're going to win your games. You're going to lose a few you're not supposed to, but... He got to a point where it would work him into a frenzy, but then you realize when they were winning, you're like, that's, you know, we told you about. So we'd always, you know, joke about it constantly, but it's that attitude that you're always trying to be the, you know, the little one that can. Like, you wanted to be that engine that can do it, and you didn't want to show too much positive attitude, but internally, you know, he believed in every team he had, but he just didn't want to, you know, make them get too overconfident and wanted to make sure they succeeded.
Don, did he learn that from you, that strategy?
That was an old trick I taught him.
Every year you're going to be in last place.
I told him, always sandbag it. I said, you know, just tell him you're trying to win the Kentucky Derby riding a Clydesdale or a Shetland pony, and then when you come out on top, you're going to look like you really done a great
Spoken
job.
By all good coaches. Yeah. Make it look good.
All right. Speaking of great coaches, we have a legend in several different venues. Bob Garris has joined us tonight. He's standing by with Melanie Pulaski with a few more thoughts on Wilson Sports and also Coach Frankenfield. Oh, we're going to be getting to her in a couple minutes. One other question I want to ask you guys, too, before we move on and talk about some current basketball issues, was about pet peeves. I think I know a few of them over the years. I know he hated missed layups and missed free throws. But was there a pet peeve over the years that really kind of got under his skin or something he hated to see happen concerning basketball?
I think that there was a lot of different things that he would get upset about during the course of a practice. But a lot of times it was mostly just to show, you know, to get the kids moving. But I think his main commitment with the program was to make sure everybody was in and was learning. Like when he taught something, he was a great teacher of an offense, and he wanted you to pay attention. When you didn't do that, that's when the trouble started. If you weren't, you know, everything was fine until you didn't pay attention. I think the kids did, if they weren't showing that they were there, he'd kick you off in a minute, and we've had it done with myself. He kicked us off and said, go down to Glovis's and go ice skating on the river, and that was it. We were out of there. So that's the type of guy he was. Pay attention to him.
Don, was there anything else you noticed that would really irritate
him?
There
were two things that really upset him, is lack of effort and lack of attitude, because nobody worked harder than Bob Frankenfield. Yeah. He always had a super game plan. If it was followed and executed, he came out on top. Or if he did, it was because of maybe lack of talent or a couple bad breaks. And it really disturbed him when a kid didn't hustle or there was a bad attitude to miss a shot, miss a layup, and didn't matter. These were the things that bothered him the most, I would say.
Sounds to me like he was just one of those guys that never was going to get out coached. He was going to be ready. They were always going to be prepared. And if they lost, it was either fate or just a lack of talent. Somebody else did a great job, too. But he was always prepared. Am I reading it right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Totally prepared. Never went into a game that he didn't have a super game plan ready to go.
All right, Melanie, now standing by with Mr. Bob Garris.
Thank you, Chris. I'm still here with Bob Garris here, and you've had such an amazing experience, so many different things that you've accomplished in your life. We've just been covering a couple of them the past couple minutes in our conversation. One of them, you know Larry Holmes.
Yes.
So just talk about your history with him and, you know, how that came about.
Well, I got to meet Larry Holmes when he was about 15 or 16 years old as an amateur, and he got into the boxing. And then once he became a professional, I also followed him wherever I could, doing some cable work over in the Eastern area. And so that's how I got to know the champ. And again, I mentioned earlier about Phoebe Holm on my bulletin board over there. I have a couple of pictures with me and the champ, Larry Holmes. And in fact, one day, or one evening, one of the girls came in, and when she saw the picture with me and Larry, she wondered where I got it and how come I had it. So I told her the story. And then I said, hey, I've known Larry all these years. I've been to his house over in Palmer, and he even has a white piano over there. I played the piano. I didn't give him any lessons, but I would have. But Larry's a good guy. Of course, not too long ago, Muhammad Ali passed away. And I never met the champ, but in my debris at my room and home, I do have a magazine, and that magazine is signed by Cassius Clay.
You're a pretty cool guy. I have to say that. Did you learn any punches or jabs or anything along the way?
No, I never would get in the way of one of those mitts. All it had to travel would be about 6 inches, and you would be flat on your back.
You're a smart guy, too.
That's right.
Getting over to a different kind of mitt, you also played professional baseball. So just talk about that a little bit, what that experience was like.
Well, I had a very short period of time with pro baseball. Way back in the day, there was a Class D, as low as you could go, and I had a chance there, and I took it, and I ended up playing for a short while in Carrollton, Georgia, and that was a Class D league, part of the Cincinnati Reds organization. But I do have the signed and sealed release, the unconditional release that I got from pro baseball. And that is in a frame in my room, if everybody would like to see it.
You mentioned still being a huge baseball fan now and that keeping you going. What is it about the sport, do you think, that teaches people a lot about life?
Well, number thing about baseball, what you got to do is understand it. And when I lived down in West Coastville a couple years ago, a friend of mine took me to the Phillies game one night. And on the way down, he said, "Do you want a Walkman?" I looked at him. I said, "I don't even know what you mean." Well, he said, "That's a little radio that we use. We listen to Richie Ashburn and his associate broadcaster, and we listen to find out what's going on with the game." I said, "Well, you can keep your Walkman because I know enough about the game. I go to a game, I want to watch it, and I want to understand it, and I do understand what's happening. And by the way, I do get to see some of the Iron Pigs games here in the Valley."
Obviously, being a spectator can never compare to being on the field yourself. But what's your favorite part about watching the game or being in a stadium like the Iron Pigs?
Well, the favorite part is keeping up with the game and the action. Watch what you're doing. Watch what's happening. Because if you catch it halfway through and say, "What happened?" there goes the whole scene. It wipes it out, and it just doesn't help you to understand the game.
And locally, you were also a sports director here, so many different things on your resume just for life. What was it like being involved in that aspect of sports?
Well, back in the day, it was Twin County Cable, and I got involved with Twin County Cable while I was teaching school at Wilsonboro. What happened there was we started our television by doing midget football games on a Sunday afternoon. And one thing led to the other, and eventually, as time went on, I did become the sports director at Twin County. Great experience.
What was your favorite part about that position?
Well, the favorite part, one of the things is you got to travel around. You got to meet a lot of people. And as Mr. Remaley just said, our cameraman here, I've known Glenn for, maybe 40 years or more. But anyway, Glenn's another guy that's been with the Twin County and RCN for many, many years.
With all your different roles within the realm of sports, how have you seen it grown and change over the many years and decades?
Well, I don't know. I think one thing wrong with Major League Baseball, and eventually as time goes by, some of those teams that aren't doing very well, they're going to disappear. But because the people themselves are getting so smart, getting to understand the game, that you just don't want to go to a game and watch guys run around and throw that ball. So I think there are too many leagues. Of course, when I grew up as a kid, we had 8 teams in one league and 8 in the other, and that was pretty good baseball.
Well, we could all learn plenty from you, talk to you for hours, but unfortunately we don't have enough time today, but it was great chatting with you again. Back to you, Chris.
All right, thank you very much. We have some great stories there from Mr. Garris. We have some great stories here from Don and Mike that were all told off the air.
Yeah, and they are good ones.
Yeah, and I can't bring them up on the show. See, that's the benefit of being here in person. You can hear all these great stories that don't make it on air.
All we could say is Bob, when he watches this on video on demand.
Well, I want to record the conversations during our breaks
here. He should know that his these guys are loyal and saved his life, because if they would have told these stories on the air, Bob would have had a lot of explaining. Yeah,
we have
to
a
do.
Lot of blackmail material we're storming up here. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with our final segment of RCN Sports Talk Gets Wild, talking Wilson basketball right after this timeout. Welcome back to the final segment of RCN Sports Talk. Sports Talk Gets Wild, broadcasting live from Buffalo Wild Wings, along with Joe Craig joining us at the main table, Don Benner and Mike Glovis. As we talked about, Mike, you're going to be taking over for Coach Frankenfield. And really, your season kind of starts tonight. And we thank you for being here. We know you gave up scrimmage. But talk about your program going forward and the transition from Coach Frankenfield to you taking over the reins.
Well, it's very interesting to, you know, coach with him and then kind of look at the program and how you want to go forward. So we're trying to, you know, keep him involved like we have in the past. We started a tournament in the spring, an Athletes for Better Education tournament. It's like March Madness. It's like the second week of March. We've been doing that now for 3 years to get the kids who can play in the spring playing. And then we, you know, go right through there with a couple other tournaments, you know, AAU tournaments, and then right into Summer League, which we're in now. The administration is great at Wilson. We have an opportunity to have the gym all summer. We have weight rooms where the kids are working out twice a week. They're also, you know, there. And tonight, as I said, we're scrimmaging, you know, tonight, you know, trying to get better. And that's the key. I'm excited about my first year. You know, it's getting everybody involved and keeping them in the program and trying to build on everything step by step. And with all the, you know, people that were ahead of me and the knowledge that I got from, you know, Coach Benner and Coach Frankenfield, I just hope I can make them proud of what I do as a coach.
Yeah, and I'm glad you told me that Dave Joseph is going to be back to your staff, and who else is going to be on your staff?
Dave Joseph is going to be my varsity assistant. His son, Josh Joseph, who is another 1,000-point scorer in the program, is going to be our JV coach. Jim Kapora, who's a ACC official for football, is our freshman coach. He's assisted by Arden Miller. Also, I have Greg Peischer, who played with me in high school, lives in, which is a great story, lives in North Carolina, is going to commute via plane to help out as a volunteer coach this this winter. So we're really excited. Mike Falcone's our junior high coach, and we're really excited about the future.
Don, do you have any advice for Mike?
Just remember, Mike, it's about the kids. That's the whole ball of wax. Nobody ever came to watch Don Benner coach. They came to watch their son play basketball. And I always tried to keep it in that perspective and do all you can to help them. They're a great bunch of kids. Any way you can help them, any way, shape, or form, it's important to them.
It's interesting listening to you to describe your program and the preparation now in the summer and spring. And I'm thinking, Don, of what it was like when you were coaching, what you weren't allowed to do, which was any of that. I mean, you couldn't – there was – I mean, it was –
the restrictions the rules, on coaching and
oh yeah, coaches weren't even allowed to be on the floor.
It changed from year to year. At one point you couldn't be involved at all. Yet not I ran all. I ran a summer league for I don't know how many years down at Wilson.
Yeah,
and then you were coaching 11 and a half months out of the year.
Yep,
that's yeah. about it.
It's really changed. The coaches today. I mean, it's a 12 month a year deal now.
There's no doubt. I mean, when you're coaching, it's not for the money that you're earning as a coach, because it's the time, and your reward is to see the success of the kids and what they do with themselves. And we're trying to stress with them whatever they want to do, whether it's go into service or they want to go to college or to a junior college, let us help them achieve whatever results they'd like. We want to make sure we know what they are, focus on their goals, and help them attain them. Because, you know, most people aren't going to college to play basketball. They're not going pro. We want to make sure they're great students. They're great, you know, people that we can look at from representation of our school, and you'd be proud to call them your son. That's what we're looking for with our kids.
And, you know, this is going to be a great trivia question at some point. When was the last time we had a father-daughter combination of head coaching the same sport in the same school district? Your Sandrine, of course, had a great career at Wilson, went on, had a great career playing at DeSales. Now she's taken over the high school girls basketball program. How is that going to work? Are you going to talk about sports when you get together at Christmas and over the holidays? Or how's that going to work?
Dad gets preference with the floor, I'll bet you.
No, actually, she was the head coach last year ahead of me. So seniority-wise, she is the senior coach in the household. And I was really proud watching her coach last year, and it was exciting for that. And she's doing well, and she's excited about the program. It is exciting for all of us as a family. We've been a sports family our whole life, and just to be a part of it and have your family involved. I have two sons that are in the program as well, so it makes for a lot of talk. From time to time.
So what advice has she given you?
Well,
and have you listened to her?
I do, because, like I said, she played college basketball, and I played college football, so it was a different thing, and I watched her through her career, and she doesn't say as much, but she gives you the looks, and she tells me in a different way than most people would be able to communicate with her.
Yeah, and she is quiet, in practices, as she is out in the court and the post game interviews.
Yes, she is. But she's actually, like I said, it's amazing. She's in the business with me as she works at Morgan Stanley, and she really enjoys that. It's very comfortable talking there. But she's not a yeller or a screamer.
Yeah.
But she's driven by goal orientation, and she's focused on that. And I hope she has continued success.
Yeah, she did a great job her freshman year as a coach. All right, Don and Mike, thanks so much for joining us. Melanie Pawlowski doing a great job interviewing Bob Garris. We're going to be back next week with another live edition of RCN Sports Talk. For Joe, I'm Chris. Thanks for watching, everyone.